The president can't speak for fallen American soldiers.
Of course he can. He's the president. He can speak for anyone he wants. He can do anything he wants. He's Donald Trump.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.
From Pacifica
with you.
Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, Round Mountains KKRN, and Eureka's KGOE. In Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, in Cottage Grove on KSO, and in Eugene on KEPW. Lancaster, Pennsylvania's WLRI, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. We're in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Grand Rapids, Michigan's WPRR. In New Orleans on WHIV, Gallup, New Mexico's KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, in Fayetteville, Arkansas on KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, in Golden Dale, Washington on KVGD, and in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day for you on the Progressive Voices channel. Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR, Revolution 99, Workforce Rising, Deprogrammed Radio, and Detour Talk, Blanketing Planet Earth 5 days a week. I am Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us. We are preparing to hit the road shortly for the holidays, so I was hoping to try and clear off my desk a little bit here today by hitting a number of items.
I'm sorry. That was a cute wishful thinking on your part.
That was my plan. I thought, okay, we'll hit all the things I wasn't able to get to over this past stupidly busy week. We'll just do it all today. Well, the Donald Trump season finale is just, as one Twitter commenter noted, absolutely on fire this year. So many surprises, so many twists and turns, and yes, cliffhangers at season's end. So we will get to all of that momentarily. We'll see what else we can get to today, because news continues to break as we go to air here today. Hopefully, so I'll be able to get to some rather mind-blowing news out of the ongoing investigation into the case of GOP absentee ballot election fraud that has thrown the U.S. House race and several others in the North Carolina 9th Congressional District into utter disarray just days now before the new Congress will be sworn in on January 3, but without, it now appears almost certain, without a representative from the Tar Heels 9th Congressional District. Also today, Desi Doyen and our Green News Report, which actually includes a few nice Christmas gifts from several from several states this year.
Yes, it does.
And no lumps of coal.
That's key.
That's key here. But as to the Donald Trump season finale of, you know, Trump the presidency, where do we start? So many exciting twists and turns today, just today alone. This morning from CNN, Acting Attorney General Matt Whitaker is advised he does not need to recuse himself from overseeing Robert Mueller's probe, despite past suggestions on how to stop it. That came in early this morning from CNN, followed by a Fox News alert on the iPhone, which appeared to confirm that news from CNN, saying DOJ ethics officials clear AG Matthew Whitaker to oversee Trump-Russia probe, source says. And then, just before airtime today, a twist from the Washington Post. Quote, contrary to earlier report, DOJ ethics official told Whitaker's team that acting attorney general should recuse from Mueller probe.
a minor loss of one word, should not. What's the difference?
That was very exciting, wasn't it? He and Trump now, I guess, will they actually pay attention to that advice from the ethics official who says no, Whitaker cannot oversee the special counsel probe, given that he has been critical of it in the past? Will they pay attention? Well, why start now? Guess we will have to tune in next season to see how that one plays out. But CNN is reporting that, in fact, Whitaker is choosing the advice from his own people around him who say, yes, he can oversee the Mueller probe. So that one will be fun as it moves forward. In the meantime, Trump's surprise announcement on Wednesday that the U.S. would be immediately pulling out of Syria. This came as a stunning twist at season's end, which nobody, not even the military or the State Department or anybody in Congress, actually saw coming. And most of them are none too happy about it either. Donald Trump declared complete and total victory against ISIS on Wednesday night and announced that he is pulling all U.S. troops out of Syria, a sudden policy shift that blindsided Congress and most senior officials at the Pentagon and State Department. He said, we have won against ISIS. We have beaten them and beaten them badly, Trump said in a video that was posted on Twitter Wednesday night, which ended with him pointing to the heavens to argue on behalf of apparently those who have been killed in the fight against ISIS, presumably in Syria, but who knows, claiming that all of those fallen troops now want the rest of the U.S. troops in Syria to come home.
We've been fighting for a long time in Syria. I've been president for almost 2 years, and we've really stepped it up. And we have won against ISIS. We've beaten them, and we've beaten them badly. We've taken back the land, and now it's time for our troops to come back home. Now we've won. It's time to come back. They're getting ready. You're going to see them soon. These are great American heroes. These are great heroes of the world because they fought for us, but they've killed ISIS, who hurts the world. And we're proud to have done it. And I'll tell you, they're up there looking down on us. And there is nobody happier or more proud of their families to put them in a position where they've done such good for so many people. So our boys, our young women, our men, they're all coming back, and they're coming back now. We won, and that's the way we want it, and that's the way they want it.
And that's the way he wants it, apparently. Our boys and men are coming home.
Our boys and girls and men. I don't know what he's talking about there. It's his usual word salad. And I have to say, I think it is cruel to promise the families of these troops that are in Syria that they're going to be coming home unless it's absolutely sure that they will be coming home.
He says they are. He's the commander in chief. He's going to bring them home.
That's what he says.
But neither the president nor anyone else at the White House has been able to provide any details on changes in the actual Syria strategy that officials described as the next stage in the conflict, whatever that is. This policy shift, according to NBC, took many lawmakers and senior administration officials completely by surprise. It drew sharp denunciations from senators on both sides of the aisle. Middle East experts also criticized the shift in strategy, saying that it would imperil the U.S.'s Kurdish allies, strengthen the hands of ISIS and Russia and Iran and Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad. A senior administration official who agreed to brief reporters on background on the phone on the condition of anonymity, apparently because the administration is so proud of this decision, they didn't even want to put anyone out there with their own name. That senior administration official could not say whether all U.S. troops will actually leave Syria or couldn't give a timeline for the withdrawal. The official said during this background conference call that small pockets of ISIS remain in the country and serve as, however, quote, no excuse to remain in perpetuity, and that they can be eliminated by local forces and regional troops. The president changed his mind after his administration's recent declaration that American forces would not leave Syria until all Iranian troops and their proxies are gone. The official, senior administration official, said the issue here is that the president has made a decision. He gets to do that. That's his prerogative. The decision comes as a surprise even to the U.S. Special Envoy for Syria. Joel Rayburn was scheduled to speak at a private event on Syria policy on Wednesday, but his appearance was canceled less than half an hour before it was scheduled to begin, just as Trump started tweeting about all of this. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina was among the first to condemn the plan because there is no war that he is against having, apparently. He said an American withdrawal at this time would be a big win for ISIS, Iran, Assad, Russia. In his statement, he said, "I fear it will lead to devastating consequences for our nation, the region, and throughout the world." Not all senators were against the plan, however. Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky said that the president thought he was great because the president was defying, quote, the naysayers on both sides of the aisle. Rand Paul, of course, is the noted defense expert who has in the past condemned the U.S. for its use of lethal drones in foreign countries while praising their use right here in the U.S. as long as it was to kill someone who might be robbing a liquor store. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Nonetheless, he said, "We have troops in so many countries. We're fighting everywhere because no one knows how to declare victory. So I'm supportive of the president's declaration." Well, that's one. The U.S. is thought to have some 2,000 troops in the region, though the military confirms having just 503 in Syria. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Joseph Dunford, said 2 weeks ago that, quote, "with regard to stabilization, we still have a long way to go in Syria." He said, speaking at a Washington Post event, that the U.S. had completed just 20% of its goal of training as many as 40,000 local forces in Syria. Experts in the region have also decried this move, calling it a sad state of affairs. Even with a total withdrawal from Syria, the U.S. would still have a huge military presence, however, in the Middle East, with 5,200 troops remaining across the border in Iraq. Republican lawmakers have made it publicly clear they were caught completely off guard by the announcement. And behind closed doors, Trump, apparently influenced by a phone call with the president of Turkey, who had criticized the U.S. involvement in Syria, Trump went against the advice of some of his most trusted advisors and highest-ranking officials. According to the Washington Post, the people they spoke with said that Trump made up his mind on Tuesday after a meeting with White House aides, including Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Most of those in attendance reportedly strongly disagreed with Trump on this matter. Mattis argued to Trump that ISIS was still in operation in Syria and a pullout of 2,000 U.S. troops stationed in the area would fuel mayhem. The president ignored that advice, or maybe he heard the word mayhem and he got very excited about it. One source told the Post that the decision was a, quote, clear rebuke of General James Mattis, the defense secretary, who Trump has increasingly ostracized in recent months. Mattis would be the last of the generals who Trump had described proudly over and over again as my generals that he had tapped to run the Pentagon, the NSA, Homeland Security, and then as his chief of staff at year's end. If he makes it that long, Mattis would be the only general left who Donald Trump has not run out of their top cabinet level position. But as we go to air just minutes ago, apparently Donald Trump says that Jim Mattis is out. He will retire at the end of February after serving the administration for 2 years. He is stepping down, and that may have something to do with what now Trump officials are bracing themselves for, an announcement that could come even as we're on air here today.
I hope not.
An announcement said to be similar to his decision to withdraw U.S. troops from Syria. It is thought he might be planning to pull out of where?
Afghanistan
as well. So we'll see. We'll let you know if that happens, at least while we're on air. See, I told you it was a thrilling season finale. Trump is also being roundly criticized on Twitter for that video that he posted, suggesting that he was speaking for fallen American soldiers who would agree with his decision to pull U.S. troops out of Syria. At least one Republican congressman has joined the denunciation of that video. Congressman Ryan Kinzinger of Republican of Illinois, an Iraq combat veteran, told Fox News on Wednesday that he found Trump's remarks disturbing and that he did not think the president could speak to on behalf of his fallen comrades. So that's not going well, but it doesn't matter. Donald Trump seems to be digging in with more anyway. But, of course, every good season finale, of course, needs a dramatic cliffhanger or two. And at least as we go to air, it looks like we've got one. And Desi Doyen, perhaps I was premature in giving you credit for your prediction last week that Trump would blink.
Yes.
When it came to his standoff with Congress over the $5 billion that he's demanding for his border wall with Mexico, which he has now begun to describe as artistically designed steel slats.
Oh, so it's a little switch then.
Instead of an actual concrete wall, as he had long promised. Last week, you'll recall he had told Democratic leaders, Pelosi and Schumer, that he would be proud to shut the federal government down at Christmas by refusing to sign a government funding bill if it did not include $5 billion in taxpayer money for the wall slash steel slates, as he is now calling it. Well, after his administration appeared to have backed down yesterday, and Desi Doyen took credit for being right about that.
You gave me credit for that.
Donald Trump is now back to demanding funding for that border wall with Mexico in order to avoid a government shutdown, throwing Congress back into chaos. Yes, mayhem and chaos. He loves it.
Well,
and
he is the chaos president.
Raising the possibility of a partial shutdown as of midnight on Friday. Bum, bum, bum. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders said in a statement late on Thursday, which may or may not change yet again by the time some of our affiliates air today's broadcast, who knows, that the president was meeting with members of Congress and that at this moment the president does not want to go further without border security, which includes steel slats or a wall, she said. The president is continuing to weigh his options, but has now repeated several times today that he does not want to move forward without additional money for border security. Earlier this week, you'll recall that Trump's initial flipped position. So last week he said he would be proud to shut down the government if he doesn't get the $5 billion that he is demanding. And then Press Secretary Sanders explained to reporters that they would find the $5 billion somewhere else to begin building their wall. And when pressed by a reporter, explained rather hilariously, he said, and I don't have time to play it with everything going on, but he pressed her on the fact that the taxpayers, one way or another, are going to be paying for this, despite the fact that Trump had promised Mexico would pay for it. And she said, well, no, it's not the taxpayers. We're going to find it instead in other executive agencies and use that money to pay for the wall. And the
of course, the other agencies are paid with taxpayer
money. Right. And when that was pointed out to her, she said, well, no, it's going to be covered by money.
By all the revenue we get from the new NAFTA.
Right.
Which, of course, isn't true.
Well, some private people, corporations may receive more money, but that does not go to the wall. So, yes, it would be the taxpayers paying for this, no matter what she says here. MSNBC's Chris Hayes on Twitter was has helpfully scripted out the new call and response for Donald Trump at his rallies that goes something like this. You know, he always asks about the wall and who's going to pay for it. So what are we going to build? Aesthetically tasteful steel slats. Who's going to pay for it? The net growth resulting from a mildly renegotiated trade deal. I can hear it now. Someone added in response, assemble those slats. Assemble those slats. So this is all a complete mess. It's a complete cliffhanger. Congress had come after yesterday. The Senate had come and passed a bill that would continue to fund the government, a continuing resolution until the beginning of February. So this would have punted the fight to the next Congress, which will have a Democratic majority, by the way, in the U.S. House. Senate had passed that bill. The House was about to pass the same bill so everyone could go home for Christmas. And then Donald Trump changed his mind back again and said, nope, not going to do it, I don't think, unless there's additional border security. So that's sort of where we are on that. Democrats are adamant they will not accept border wall funding in any bill. So a bill can't pass the Senate without bipartisan support. If Trump won't sign any bill without money for the wall, then a shutdown is now almost guaranteed for the holidays. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, soon to be House Speaker, summed up the current GOP position by saying, Republicans are in a state of disarray. We don't know what'll happen next. We're right in the middle of a sort of meltdown on the part of Republicans. Well, since every good Christmas episode needs an evil villain out to make life even worse for poor people, the Trump administration is stepping up there in their season finale as well. The administration unveiled a plan today to force hundreds of thousands more Americans to hold jobs if they want to keep receiving food stamps, pursuing through executive powers what they could not achieve in Congress. The country's food assistance program, which is run by the Agriculture Department, already requires most adults without dependents to work if they collect food stamps for any more than 3 months during a three-year period. But the USDA regulations allow states to waive the requirements in areas where the unemployment rate are at least 20% greater than the national rate. Well, the Trump administration's USDA, that's not good enough. They are now proposing that states waive the requirement only in areas where unemployment is above 7%.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, the current national employment rate is around 3.7%. So pretty much nowhere will, in fact, roughly almost a million people live in areas that stand to lose those waivers if this new Trump administration scheme goes through. The new plan would make nearly a million already hungry Americans. The food stamp benefits are ridiculously skimpy. It'll make those Americans even hungrier, but it will teach them for being poor and unable to find work, apparently.
Hey, whenever you can punish the poor, there's a lot of white Christian evangelicals like that.
Agriculture, very Christian of them.
Yes.
Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue said on a press call that the measure would save taxpayers $15 billion over 10 years. That's fantastic, isn't it? He says this restores the dignity of work to a sizable segment of our population. Remember when the Republicans used to pretend that they were against social engineering? That was fun. Not anymore. Now we're teaching them all the lessons of the dignity of work.
The dignity of starving.
Say these rich people who many of them don't work at all and just let their money,
their inherited money.
Yeah, accrue interest.
Like Donald Trump.
Yeah. Tougher eligibility requirements would also overwhelm state efforts to help people find work, according to the director of the Washington State Department of Social Health Services, who says even with as robust a program as we have, including a partnership with every community college in the state, it would be, quote, really hard for Washington to expand its job training efforts without significantly more funding. Well, that's your problem, loser. And of course, the taxpayers of Washington State, it's their problem too, because they're going to have to cough up that money, apparently. And all of the other state taxpayers as well. Since the 1996 welfare law took effect, every state but Delaware has sought a time limit waiver at some point, according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, which tracks these things. Congressional Democrats quickly slammed the plan, questioned whether the administration has a legal basis to authorize it at all. Oh, pish posh. Legal basis. A president can do whatever he wants with our nation's laws anytime he or she wants. Apparently. Remember when Republicans used to also pretend that they were against the president doing stuff like this on his own? Particularly when Congress has just passed the new farm bill in both houses and expressly chose not to include the new restriction that the administration now wants to put in place. So we will see if it even stands up when it is inevitably challenged, which of course costs taxpayers even more money in defending all of these lawsuits. Senator Debbie Stabenow, Democrat from Michigan, said that Congress, quote, Congress writes laws and the administration is required to write rules based on the law. She's the top-ranking Democrat on the Senate Agriculture Committee. The proposed changes will be published in the Federal Register, Purdue says, and the public will then have 60 days to comment.
Yeah, so two things about this. Research shows that making struggling workers even hungrier does not help them find work any faster. It's actually directly counterproductive. Hungry workers don't work as well. They are not as productive, and it does not magically create jobs. And secondly, a lot of economists are predicting that the business cycle is slowing down and there will likely be a recession coming up in the next couple of years. By doing this, if they succeed in changing this rule, that will also undermine states' ability to help in these economic downturns when there are no jobs, when there are massive layoffs, and there are lots more people who need to be on here who cannot find jobs because they don't exist.
Well, you're ignoring the fact that Christmas season finales need a villain to make the poor people go hungry.
Well, so, this is certainly a lump of coal.
So keep that in mind, Des. I don't know. Get your priorities straight on this stuff. Finally, in today's thrilling Donald Trump, the presidency season finale, just to make it really exciting, one last shocking twist. Well, at least one, we'll see. And frankly, it's one that isn't all that shocking at all, at least for those of us in the reality-based community versus the reality TV community. An important distinction. North Korea has a Christmas gift for the president today, providing another excellent cliffhanger to keep us all in suspense until next season. North Korea said that it will never unilaterally give up its nuclear weapons unless the U.S. first removes what Pyongyang called a nuclear threat. The latest from North Korea comes as the U.S. and North Korea struggle over the sequencing of the denuclearization that Washington wants and the removal of international sanctions desired by Pyongyang, according to AP. The North's unusually blunt comments today is being seen as proof of what outside skeptics have long said, that would probably include us here, that Kim will never voluntarily relinquish an arsenal that he sees as a stronger guarantee of his survival than whatever security assurances the untrustworthy U.S. might be able to provide. The statement suggests that North Korea will eventually demand U.S. withdraw or significantly reduce the American troop presence in the peninsula. Kim and Trump met, as you'll recall, June 12 in Singapore. That was this year. June 12 in Singapore, when they agreed on a vague goal for, quote, complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, but they did not describe how and when any of that would occur. North Korea for decades has been pushing a concept of denuclearization that bears no resemblance to the American definition, or at least the Donald Trump definition, which we pointed out over and over again before, during, and after that summit and the so-called agreement with Pyongyang, who is vowing now to pursue nuclear development until the U.S. removes its troops and the nuclear umbrella defending South Korea and Japan. Yes, that is always what they meant by denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, at least for anyone paying attention to such trivial details. In the Thursday statement, the North made clear that it is sticking to its traditional definition of that word. Their statement said the U.S. must now recognize the accurate meaning of the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, and especially must study geography, they said. When we talk about the Korean Peninsula, it includes the territory of our republic and also the entire region of South Korea, where the U.S. has placed its invasive force, including nuclear weapons. North Korea's reiteration of its long-standing position on nuclear denuclearization could, writes AP, proved to be a major setback for diplomacy, which was revived earlier this year following a series of provocative nuclear and missile tests that left Kim and Trump spending most of 2017 exchanging personal insults and war threats. But the 2018 season wasn't nearly as exciting, apparently, as 2017 in that regard, so perhaps it's time to ramp things back up towards 11 in the 2019 season of Trump the presidency. So all of those stories and undoubtedly many more to come as we head into Christmas and the thrilling Donald Trump season finale. All right, a quick break and a few items to try and catch up on here, including from the November midterms and maybe even 2020. Yikes. Before we hit the road for Christmas. And, of course, the Green News Report is also ahead. I'm Brad Friedman. Ho, ho, ho. Boy, howdy do I. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Some information coming in from the announcement just as we went to air here that Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis, General Jim Mattis, is resigning from his post. In his resignation letter to the president, he implicitly criticized Donald Trump for not treating allies with respect and for not being, quote, clear-eyed about U.S. enemies and competitors, writing, "My views on treating allies with respect and also being clear-eyed about both malign actors and strategic competitors are strongly held and informed by over four decades of immersion in these issues. We must do everything possible to advance an international order that is conducive to our security, prosperity, and values, and we are strengthened in this effort by the solidarity of our alliances." He went on to say, "Because you have the right to have a Secretary of Defense whose views are better aligned with yours on these and other subjects, I believe it is right for me to step down from my position." The soon-to-be former defense chief, General James Mattis, said he is on his way out, the last of Donald Trump's generals to be run out of Dodge by this presidency. And as I say, this comes on the heels of Donald Trump declaring we are leaving Syria without consulting with anyone about how to do it, what the timeline will be, and catching Mattis and other folks off guard, apparently, and potentially we'll see another similar announcement to come from Donald Trump. All right, let me at least finish up a few items here that I had hoped to cover. Oh, Des, you're going to be delighted to hear this. Democrats will have a dozen presidential primary debates to pick their presidential nominee in 2020.
Okay.
According to the DNC.
on a political, I guess, an overall wealth and health of the country idea, that's a great idea. But personally, I hate the idea.
On a Desi Doyen health idea.
On a Desi Doyen having to stay up late making cuts of debates, yes.
There will be six debates in 2019 and six in 2020. This according to announcement from the DNC today. But in fact, there actually may be more than that.
No.
Because as the DNC press release explains, the first two debates will occur in June and July 2019, and in order to accommodate a potentially large field of candidates, both of those debates may occur over multiple consecutive nights. If that has to happen, they explain, the lineup for each night will be determined at random, with qualifying candidates assigned one night per debate. The random selection of candidates will be done publicly. And then they will occur on a monthly basis in 2019. Six more will take place between January and April in 2020. That is three more than the Democrats held in 2016, when frontrunner Hillary Clinton and her allies at the DNC had pushed for a limited debate schedule at the time. This comes after DNC Chair Tom Perez met with stakeholders from all corners of the party, reportedly, to try to avoid a similar controversy in 2020, in the 2020 cycle, to the one back in 2016, when allies of Bernie Sanders accused the DNC of putting its thumb on the scale for Hillary Clinton. But yeah, 2020, we're not going to be talking about 2020 until I say we're ready to talk about 2020.
Okay.
Because frankly, we're not even done with 2018 elections around here. And given the fact that the evidentiary hearing for the North Carolina 9th Congressional District race, which was beset with allegations of GOP absentee ballot election fraud, that evidentiary hearing is not even going to take place now until January 11th, 2019. So it seems early to talk about 2020, but there you have it from the DNC. As I say, we're still on 2018 and trying to wrap that up. And this amazing story from Joe Bruno, who's been doing a great job in South Carolina from Charlotte's WSOC-TV Channel 9 regarding that evidentiary hearing. The North Carolina State Board of Elections yesterday released the 2016 Bladen County, North Carolina investigative report that had been referred to prosecutors concerning GOP absentee ballot fraud back in 2016. But for some reason, those prosecutors never acted on it before the 2018 election, allowing the bad guys who were identified very specifically as defrauding voters back in 2016, allowing them to be hired and work again in the 2018 election. It's kind of remarkable when you look at some of the details from this 2016 report, which has now been released, and what it found out about the guy at the center of this scandal in North Carolina's 9th Congressional District, a GOP contractor, a guy by the name of McCray Dowless. He was hired by the Republican nominee in the 9th Congressional District race this year, for the U.S. House in both the general election and in the primary, to run the absentee ballot campaign for the congressman, the Republican who wants to be a congressman, Mark Harris. He hired Dowless in Bladen County to do work, and perhaps in Robeson County as well. Those are two of the counties of the eight that make up the 9th Congressional District. But this 278-page investigation from the 2016 election found Dowless was paying workers to solicit absentee ballot request forms and to collect their absentee ballots later on. So workers were required by Dowless in 2016, according to this report, which was not acted on, to deliver absentee ballots to him and to push for certain candidates. According to the report, the State Board of Elections, the NCSBE, the investigation of the complaints began with interviews From these complainants, the interviews led to information that strongly suggested that Leslie McCrae Dowless Jr., a.k.a. McCrae Dowless, who is associated with Patriots for Progress, this is a group that he set up, was paying certain individuals to solicit absentee request forms and to collect absentee ballots from Bladen County voters. In doing so, workers employed by Dowless were required to hand carry the ballots to Dowless in order to be paid. Dowless allegedly instructed his workers to, quote, push votes for certain candidates while meeting with voters. And the report notes that possession of an absentee ballot for delivery to a voter or for return to a county board of elections by anyone other than the voter's near relative, or the voter's verifiable legal guardian is a class one felony under North Carolina state law. Two people that Bruno had interviewed this year, several weeks ago, which we had covered at the time, told him that McCrae Dowless paid them in 2018 to do exactly that, to pick up absentee ballots, to drop them off to Dowless himself, and to promote Mark Harris, the Republican in the congressional race, and Bladen County Sheriff Jim McVicker. Both of them are Republicans who ran in November, and both who reportedly paid Dowless and reportedly won their race. In the 2016 primary in the 9th District, McCrae Dowless worked for Republican Todd Johnson. In that primary, absentee ballots, absentee by mail votes in Bladen County showed Todd Johnson winning 221 of them to Mark Harris, who also ran but lost back then. He got four votes compared to 221 for the guy that was paying Dowless at the time. And the incumbent congressman, Robert Dollage Pittenger, he received just one vote back in 2016 in the primary. The investigative report also says that Dowless attempted to obstruct the North Carolina State Board of Elections investigation by warning people of the warning people of interest that investigators were looking for them. The report said Dowless coached them on what to say if they were contacted again after the 2016 election. So we knew all of this was going on, and this was allowed to continue. Dowless apparently made phone calls to warn two workers, Caitlin Kroom and Matthew Mathis, that the State Board of Investigation would be contacting them after Dowless himself was contacted by the investigators. The two people accused of collecting ballots back in 2016 told investigators that Dowless would pay only half of what they earned when they brought in the absentee request form to him, and then they would get the other half when they brought back the actual ballots to him. Dowless also instructed them to avoid areas where mostly minority voters resided, and he provided a sample ballot with marks indicating candidates he wanted them to promote. The Wake County District Attorney had previously said that there was an open criminal investigation related to absentee ballots back in 2016. But sort of gave a few different excuses. Oh, it was a very difficult case to figure out. And then we had this hurricane this year. All of this, the district attorney said, is why they didn't bring charges and why Dowless was able to go ahead and continue doing this work, even though they have all of this information on them from 2 years ago, from 2016. A phone shared by two accused of picking up ballots in 2016 listed Dowless as, quote, McCrae boss man. One of the two texted McCrae in November of 2016 concerning the investigators. Hey, McCrae, that weird number was the investigators. They called me again today. They want to meet with me in the morning. I'm scared, and I don't remember half of what we are supposed to say. I've never been investigated for anything. It was a text message that was included in this investigation from 2016, which seems like they got this guy pretty dead to rights at this point. If nothing else, for obstruction of justice, for telling these guys what to say when the investigators showed up. But here, They have them dead to rights in this text message exchange from 2016. These are text messages that are included in the report. One of the two guys here who were employed by Dulles, one of the two had helped a guy apparently from Ohio, or at least in Ohio, to get an absentee ballot. This is in North Carolina, but to get an absentee ballot in North Carolina by asking this man for his Social Security number and date of birth. Hey, bro, trying to get your info so I can fill one of these forms out for you. This is the text message. It'll send a voting ballot to your home. I'll have it sent to me, and I'll ask you who you want to vote for and fill it out for you if you want. Only way I get paid is getting people to do this junk. Guy says, I guess so, but I'm still in Ohio right now. The guy replies to say, that's straight, bro. I can fill it out for you. We're talking about a ballot here. We're talking about an absentee ballot. I can fill it out for you.
We're talking about a felony here.
I just need your birthday and the last four of your Social Security number to make sure you're registered to vote. How is it up there? He adds. All right. And then later October 1 of 2016, the guy writes back to him to say, yo, do you care who you vote for? I got your ballot in the mail. Who you want for president? The guy responds, I don't think it really makes a difference, but, and then it's redacted. And then it says, he will be the one to finally start the zombie apocalypse, LOL. I guess we can probably imagine who it was he wanted him to vote for back in...
In 2016.
Back in 2016. So they had this dead to rights. They had these guys. They had these people, it seems to me, dead to rights before 2018. And yet no action was taken, and Mark Harris was allowed to hire this same guy, McRae Dowless, in an election in which he ends up winning by reportedly 905 votes. And by the way, the report shows and evidence shows, reporting shows, that Dowless knew better than to get too many votes for the people who had hired him. All of the races he was involved in which his candidates ended up winning were by very narrow margins. So apparently, as not to raise notice. By the way, on the same day that report came out, the North Carolina Republican Party overrode the veto of the Democratic governor of North Carolina to push through their photo ID polling place voting restrictions to keep people from voting, specifically Democratic-leaning voters, even while this GOP election fraud case continues. Once again, the evidentiary hearing will be in January 11th to determine what will happen, if they'll have another election again or if they will certify the Republican candidate who hired this GOP voter fraud fraudster in 2018. The story will continue after the holidays. All right, quick break, and we're back with the latest Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
The streets are filled with Christmas cheer. At least it's only once a year. Perfect parcels tied with perfect bows, and carols ringing in my ear. Icicles on eaves troughs and tinsel on the tree, but it's a green Christmas for me.
Well, for me and for you, Desi Doyen, and for our listener. By the way, have any other shoes dropped while we were on break?
Not at the moment, and I'm afraid to look.
I know, I'm afraid to look. No, I think we may get out. We'll just dump everything else on Angie Coiro when she fills in for us over the holidays. What could possibly go wrong? All right, let's get to it. Our latest Christmas Green News Report.
There's all kinds of weather emergencies and challenges that all of the services are dealing with on the climate side.
Climate change is expensive, particularly for the U.S. military. 2018 on track to be fourth costliest year for U.S. weather disasters. Polls show Americans waking up to climate change, Plus,
we know what we must do. Now we have to have the vision, the courage, and the competence to do it.
Cities and states step up, setting ambitious new climate goals.
All of that ambition and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We're saying goodbye to another member of Trump's cabinet, Secretary of the Interior and Dudley Do-Wrong, Ryan Zinke. He had so many scandals that the White House officials told him he had until the end of the year to leave or be fired. That is impressive. Getting fired for ethics violations in the Trump administration is like being fired from the Rockettes for kicking.
This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, as we wrap up another year, we're starting to add up the math of the cost of climate change.
Yes, because climate change disasters are expensive. 2018 will likely rank among the top 4 years on record in the U.S. for the highest number of weather disasters in a single year, costing more than $1 billion. Remember Hurricane Michael, the near Category 5 hurricane that made that historic landfall in the Florida Panhandle in October? Well, during a little-noticed Senate Armed Services Committee hearing last week, it was revealed that Florida's Tyndall Air Force Base alone suffered about $5 billion in damage.
Wow.
U.S. Secretary of the Navy Richard Spencer warned that all coastal U.S. military facilities are vulnerable to climate impacts.
It's going to be oceanfront areas, water rising issues. It's going to be areas exposed to what we've seen now as 100-year storms that come every 2 or 3 years. We're going to have to start addressing this so we do this correctly and spend the money correctly.
Huh. $5 billion it's going to cost to fix Tyndall Air Force Base? Isn't $5 billion the money that Donald Trump has been denied to build his wall on the Mexican border?
Good point. Donald Trump aside, Americans are waking up to the need for action on climate change. According to a new Reuters poll that found broad consensus, more than 70% agreed with the statement that the U.S. should take aggressive action to slow global warming and that it poses an imminent or serious threat to the United States, including a majority of Republicans. A different poll from Yale Climate Communications found strong bipartisan support for the Green New Deal. That's a proposal from some Democrats to accelerate the transition away from fossil fuels to clean, renewable energy. The Green New Deal would set a national target of 100% zero carbon electricity by 2030, upgrade the nation's energy grid, buildings, transportation infrastructure, and energy efficiency, and provide training for the jobs to accomplish it all. 80% of respondents supported that, including 60% of Republicans. However, Huffington Post warns that previous research shows voter support for bipartisan policies tends to collapse when they're told it's supported by a politician from the opposite party. So get ready for the climate change denial industry to smear the Green New Deal as a partisan policy to undermine it.
And to undermine the majority Republican support for it.
Yep. More good news. The City Council of the District of Columbia has passed one of the most ambitious clean energy bills in the United States, setting a target of switching to 100% renewable electricity by 2032, just 14 years, meaning that soon even the White House is going to run on renewable energy. In New York, Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo has committed to a statewide target of 100% carbon neutral electricity by 2040 as part of a statewide Green New Deal. In Minnesota, the city of Minneapolis has adopted plans to phase out polluting diesel-powered buses and shift its entire bus fleet to all electric. But California is going even further. California is now the first state in the nation to mandate eliminating fossil fuels from public transit buses. The California Air Resources Board voted unanimously to require all new buses in the state to be zero emissions by 2029 and a target of transitioning the state's entire fleet of 12,000 buses to carbon-free by 2040. partially paid for by the state settlement with German automaker Volkswagen over its illegal emissions cheating software.
That'll teach them. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Here's to a safe and warm,
but not too warm,
holiday season. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Red nose on the reindeer, tinsel on the tree, but it's a green Christmas for me.
Oh, it always is.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Well, of course, for us, it's year-round, but yes, green Christmas.
Right. Like you always say on, what is it, Environmental Day? What do they call that?
Earth Day.
Thank you. There you go. It's always Earth Day, so I guess it's always a green Christmas for you, Desi Doyen.
Indeed.
All right. Well, I think that's it. No other disasters have yet befallen us, though no doubt they will. Stay tuned. More to come in the thrilling Donald Trump season finale. My thanks to my producer, Desi Doyen, and to all of you who've listened to the show today and every day. If you missed any portion of our program, of course, or any program of ours, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com or at your favorite podcast site. We hope wherever you get it, you'll put in a kind word for us to help make it a little bit easier for everyone else to find us as well. You can drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. I'm on the Facebooks and the Twitters at The Brad Blog. Please find, follow, and share us there. And my thanks to those of you who have supported us throughout the past year, and in many cases, the past many years, by stopping by bradblog.com/donate, where we rely on only you to stay on your public airwaves. We've made it through the 2018 elections as we had hoped, through the end of the year, by and large. Again, thanks to all of you. So, hey, before the end of the year, stop by bradblog.com/donate. Your support is appreciated. We are going to be hitting the road, as I said at the top of the show. Angie Coiro will be in for us. Actually, a mix of some best ofs and some Angie Coiros.
And a special holiday special but you'll not want to miss.
Oh, that's right. That's coming up as well. So pay attention. yes, Angie Coiro will be here with all new, fresh broadcasts in the days ahead. So don't worry. Until then, from both Desi and me to all of you, I hope you have a warm and peaceful, not too warm, as Desi says, but a peaceful and happy holiday season.
Yes,
that
happy
is
holidays.
It. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.